Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. Bet $100 at WynnBET and get a $100 free bet. Head on over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WynnBET. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNNBET to claim your free bet today. We're also brought to you by IPVanish. IPVanish is the official VPN of SGPN, and they're offering 70% off if you go to IPVanish.com/SGP. That's IPVanish.com/SGP. And make sure to check out Draft Day 2.0, starting August 9th at noon Pacific. Ryan Real Money Kramer will be drafting for 24 hours straight. The Fantasy Football Marathon will raise money for Daryl, a loyal listener who is injured in a motorcycle accident. So head on over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/draftday for more details.
Adio, DeGenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. If you're looking for a podcast where neither the betting advice nor the dad jokes hit, then this is the place for you. This is episode 183. I am going to send it out to everyone listening, all you listeners who are allowing us into your ear holes. You helped us triple our downloads over the past couple months, and we're shooting up the charts at SGPN. So thank you all for your support, and hopefully we haven't lost you too much money along the way. I am one of the hosts here. I will be Jeff Chalks Fox, the chalky half of the duo here. I did okay with my picks last night at UFC, but I lost money 2 weeks in a row. So I kind of know how my co-host feels now. It's not a nice feeling. So he somehow has to live with this every single week, though. I don't know how he does it. let's bring him in and find out. It's the one and only Gumby God, Daniel Vreeland. Hello.
We still went 6-4, right? Both of us?
We were both. Yep.
Yeah.
But I lost money 2 weeks in a row, though. I don't generally do that, Dan. I'm still up over $1,000 for the year, but still.
It's almost like betting on every single fight is usually not a very lucrative process. Or at least betting straight money lines, yes. The same amount of money on each amount. Fight. That's generally not the move. So, but it was also, I will say, a night of like weird breaks too.
Yes, it was.
Like literally and figuratively. Speaking of Stephanie Egger's elbow, but also just like guys who came out looking different, which was sort of fun. And yeah, it was weird for sure.
We're gonna jump right into it because we probably should have enjoyed it more.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun really card. Even the ones I missed on, like I missed on both the Ultimate Fighter finales, which is funny because I'm like the only one who watches Tough. I don't feel bad that Zach Pounga lost. Like I was in on Zach Pounga. I really like Zach Pounga. I think he's got the better future than Muhammad Usman. I still think he's a better fighter than Muhammad Usman, but like I didn't feel bad that Usman won. Usman's a good dude too, and it was like a fun knockout. It was brutal. It was good all around.
A lot of people in sportsgamblingpodcast.com/discord are upset that Ponga lost because I think he messed up a lot of people's parlays. It seemed
mine, or at least some vocal people. Mine too. Yes.
Yes. All right. Let's jump into it. In this, after I tell you, of course, about WynnBET, our good friends WynnBET. Are you thinking of joining WynnBET? Well, you should if you haven't already, but now is the perfect time. New customers who bet $100 get $100 get a $100 free bet. So they're matching your money. If you're betting baseball, you have to check out WinBet. The reduced juice in baseball games makes them the best place to bet MLB. Plus, the WinBet casino is always open 24 hours a day, where you can get a 100% deposit, a bonus up to $1,000. There's so much to choose from, and all you have to do is head over to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/winbet so that they know that we are the degens that sent you. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNNBET to claim your free bet today. Offer subject to change, terms and conditions at winbet.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where play through WinBet is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Also, it is that time of year again. Draft day 2.0. One of the bosses, Ryan, Real Money Kramer, will be drafting fantasy football best ball teams for 24 hours straight, just as he did last year. The drafting starts on August the 9th at noon Pacific. That would be 3 p.m. for people in the correct time zone. So noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. The crew will be raising money for Daryl, a loyal listener who was injured in a motorcycle accident, and you can draft with Ryan and a ton of special guests. All the details are at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/draftday. At sportsgamblingpodcast.com/draftday. Maybe we should do a 24-hour podcast too, Dan. Don't you think?
Do you want to do a 24-hour? Yep.
People love us.
We'll get me just talking about everybody who has ever fought for Cage Warriors.
That'll work.
Yeah, we'll go around the globe, and I'll give you one fighter from every country that I think the UFC should sign.
What if we talked about every person that fought in the UFC?
I think you would
say that in 24 hours. It'd probably be more.
I don't know. I think you would definitely. I would run into like a couple of people who I don't remember all that well. If you started it in let's say you started it in 2005, I could handle it.
Oh, we should. That's something we may have to do on one of these off weeks. UFC is going dark again in a couple weeks. I'm sure we'll have picks for some sort of sport, fight. But yeah, maybe I should just randomly. Maybe that could be a feature that we do. I just pick a random fighter from the past and see if Dan has any useful
insight on him.
Yeah, info on he or she. That would be interesting. I'm sure some of the degens would enjoy that, but not this week. No. This episode we're going to recap last night's UFC and ESPN. Santos versus Hill, a record event, 10 fights, 10 finishes. Do you know what event it ties for 100% finish rate?
Yeah, Bisping Rockhold had 11. Yes. Yeah, they showed that on the broadcast like 72 times. Yep.
You wouldn't have known that on your own though, right?
I don't think so. Like, I might have had to think about it, but I don't think I would have come up with that on my own.
Yeah. All right. So we had ourselves lots of finishes. We ended up with 10 fights because two fights left us last minute. We lost Jason Witt, Josh Quinlan, because Quinlan has metabolites.
Dude,
it's so funny how somewhere all of a sudden I can't say a word for some reason. Metabolite. It's a very easy word, and it's not like I'm trying to say what this steroid was. DHCMT.
Drostolone.
Okay, if you want to, it's much longer than that. But anyhow, he's got the John Jones thing, where he's don't they call it pulsing?
Yeah.
He has some drugs in his system still, which is why I was picking him to win, because I'm especially going to pick him to win now that it's been confirmed he still has some drugs in his system. So anyhow, that fight has been pushed ahead a week because I guess California doesn't care about these things, but Nevada does, I guess.
So just to clarify for people about how this happened. So first of all, yeah, like he tested positive for this steroid a while ago, and it's one of those things that just sticks in your system, and typically it pops up when your body goes through some sort of change. It like can like come out of your muscle fibers basically and like cause you to show trace amounts of it again, and a weight cut is one of those things that your body can you know is going through a rapid change. So USADA doesn't care about the amount he has in his body, so this isn't a USADA pop. The Nevada State Athletic Commission is one of the only commissions in America who cares about the trace amounts. So basically what happened was he tested positive on the NESAC, which is the Nevada State Athletic Commission test, the week of, which means that they're not going to let him fight in Nevada, whereas just about every other commission, especially California, which can be kind of cavalier about stuff like that, will be fine with him fighting. So, yeah, I heard they were going to push it to next week, although the broadcast seemed to hint that maybe not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's originally I heard it was going to be pushed ahead. But, yeah, I don't think it's officially been announced that it's going to be. So
I'm guessing if I had to guess, too, it's probably because Jason Witt doesn't want to fight up a weight class against the guy who's that jacked and won't have to cut weight. And Jason Witt doesn't want to do two weight cuts in 2 weeks. That would be my guess.
Yeah, that is true. Now, I think it may still be penciled in, but who knows if it's going to happen. The other fight we lost, Ariana Lipsky versus Priscilla Cachoeira. Lipsky came in overweight and then was not medically cleared to fight. So apparently she's going to be medically cleared miraculously next week in California, up a weight class as well, or at a catch weight, wasn't it?
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's going to be at 135. I think they actually decided to go all the way up to bantamweight, despite the fact it was originally announced that she would be fighting at 130. It does look like they're just going to go all the way up the weight class and like cut that weight cut out entirely, which makes sense because like I think the reason Nevada wouldn't clear her is because she had a bad weight cut, which turns out was COVID induced. Like during her training camp, she didn't get enough cardio in because she was dealing with a bout of COVID and her lungs wouldn't, you know, work the way they ought to. So as a result, like she had a tough time cutting the weight. So it makes sense why she would be cleared a week later. She's not going to have to do that weight cut and like the cardio thing isn't going to be an issue. So, I like that both the fights are still happening because they're both fun fights. I had dogs in both of them.
Yep. Yeah, I had a dog in the women's one. So hopefully she remains a dog. Priscilla Cachoeira, hopefully she remains a dog. Cause it seems like a lot of people, at least in our circles, were in on her for that fight. So we shall see. We'll talk more about that on Wednesday and Thursday when we break down the next fight card. So let's break down last night. Main event, we hit it. It went the way we expected it and wanted to go. Don't call me Jamal Hill, minus 280, beat Thiago Santos. Very good fight. Santos hung in there, was winning 2-1 heading into the fourth, but then Hill finally, his strikes finally cut up with him. TKO punches and elbows, 231 into the fourth round. Like I said, Santos was doing okay, landing some strikes, got the fight down to the mat a few times. He was not reacting very well to the strikes though. His reaction when he got hit wasn't very good, and a couple times he turned his back and kind of ran away after he got hit, which is never a good idea, and it did catch up to him later in the fight. It didn't the first time, but Hill did catch up to him later in the fight when he did that. So all in all, you know, it's another loss for Thiago Santos, one win in his last six fights, and but that being said, probably the biggest win of Jamal Hill's career at this point.
Yeah, I agree, it's the biggest win. I'll also say this, I think Santos looked better than he did in any of those other fights.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
When we broke this down, we said, you know, like the reason we really like Jamal Hill in this is that like Santos was having a tough time pulling the trigger for like fight after fight after fight after fight. And it was going to be tough for him to not punish Jamal Hill for stepping in. I think he did a good job of punishing Jamal Hill when he stepped into range and tried to set up his own strikes. I think Thiago Santos did a good job of doing all of that. You're right. The way he was taking a punch was at least somewhat alarming. And obviously he's still not fast enough to put together five rounds, but hey, like if that was a regular, you know, where we regularly should put three round light heavyweight fights,
yeah,
he would have won that. He was winning, you know, that's a feather in Thiago Santos's cap right there. Cause you know, like he wouldn't have done that against, I mean, all of the opponents he fought earlier, he just looked terrible. So, you know, he looked like he had some stuff there, looked like there's still some in the tank. Obviously, I'd like to see a huge step down for him or have him fight somebody who's like an up and comer. Like, I'd love to see him fight somebody like Dustin Jacoby. Like, give Jacoby a chance to step up. I think I just saw Jacoby was again booked with some killer who is not ranked, which just seems criminal. But,
yeah, he is booked with someone.
Khalil Roundtree. Yeah. Khalil Roundtree. Right. Yeah, that's insane. The dude beats, you know, everybody. Is on like a 7-fight win streak or a 7-fight unbeaten streak because he does have that draw in there with Ian Kudalaba. But like, and now he's getting, Roundtree is just insane. But yeah, like that would be a good matchup for Santos. fairly large step back in the rankings wise, at least. And then you give a young guy a chance to see if he's ready for that upper echelon.
You don't really see it very often, though. Once guys hit a certain level, you don't see step downs very often, probably because they're making the big money. By that point, the UFC tends to book you based on how much money you're making. You can see the estimated payouts over on my site, moneymma.substack.com, by the way. But yeah, you generally don't really see guys take a huge step down, which is why careers don't tend to last very long once the fighter starts sliding, because you don't really see comebacks.
They did a little bit with like somebody like Overeem, right? Like he kept getting,
yeah, I guess so.
He kept getting headliner spots, but he was fighting like, yep, you know, newcomer Sergey Pavlovich, who was 0-0 in the UFC. Like, and you know, in retrospect, Pavlovich, pretty damn good. But like they gave him steps down from where he ought to have been at that time. So like at the heavier weight classes, maybe they will. And also they've got like light heavyweights waiting in the wings. So he might be like, yep, ripe to for somebody to be springboarding off of his name.
Another main event, obviously. I was wrong. I forgot. I was talking about how many main events he's had. I forgot about the pay-per-view in there against John Jones. He made him in a two, jeez, obviously. So he's had 7 main event fights now in the past, 5 years or whatever. So yeah, he's our go-to guy, but enough talking about the losers here. Thoughts on Jamahal Hill. It's still like, if you saw those two guys standing beside one another, you wouldn't guess which one was going to win. He's a soft 205. You'd think if he really got in shape, he probably could be a middleweight. But anyhow, thoughts on his performance and what do you want to see from him?
I mean, a good win, but there's still, I don't know. I still have like a lot of questions about who, yep, he can beat in that top five.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't pick him to beat Alexander Rejcich at this point or Magomed Ankalaev.
We love Ankalaev now.
Yeah, I don't even love Ankalaev, but I do think Ankalaev would beat Jamahal Hill.
What about Jacoby? You mentioned him before. Who are you higher on at this point, Hill or Jacoby?
Dustin Jacoby.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Yeah,
his kickboxing is sharper. And like I know he's only sitting at number 14. I definitely have him higher. I have him higher in my rankings. Like, you mean, yep, to tell me Dustin Jacoby wouldn't beat Johnny Walker or Ryan Spann at this point? And those guys are ahead of him in the rankings. So, I agree with you. I'm higher on Dustin Jacoby. I think he does better defending takedowns than Jamahal Hill. I think he's, got sharper strikes. He's cleaner. That knockout he had of Dawn Jung was just devastating. So, I think Jamahal Hill, I mean, you beat somebody like Thiago Santos, you get somebody like Alexander Rejcich, or you get somebody, yeah, like Magomed Ankalaev. I don't know which one's next for Jiří Prochazka, if it's a Glover rematch or if Blankovic is getting in on that, but Rejcich or Ankalaev are sitting right there. It seems like those two dudes are next. So give him one of those, I guess.
Yeah, but then you're cannibalizing your up and coming prospects in a crappy division. That's the one thing I don't like to see. So who knows though. Too bad Anthony Smith didn't win, because then didn't get hurt, because one of these young guys could make their name off of him. But
yeah, I guess you could also give him, like whoever doesn't get the title shot between Jan Blankovic and Glover Teixeira, but that seems, yep, like a fight that's going to Ankalaev. Or that seems like a fight that's going, yeah, to, like you go Rejcich, Blankovic and give Glover the rematch. Then Ankalaev's sitting there looking for somebody kind of just like Jamahal Hill. I think that would be a move. I mean, I guess Dom Reyes is in there. Does he have a fight booked? I don't think he has a fight booked.
I don't think so.
He's lost 3 in a row, but they're only, yep, to like absolute G's. It's to John Jones, Jan Blankovic and Jiří Prochazka back to back to back. So
yeah.
Maybe Dom Reyes is the answer then.
Maybe it's light heavyweight. Who cares? Is Jeff Neal good now? I was angry. Watching.
He's incredible, dude. He's like, so good.
Jeff Neal beat Vicente Luque, KO punches, 201 in the third round. We did not hit this one. Jab is the name of the game here. He was destroying him with jabs. I can't shake the thought that Neal is benefiting on hitting guys on their way down. Career-wise, like Santiago Ponzinibbio and now Vicente Luque. He may be getting guys who have big names but are about to fall off a cliff career-wise.
I don't know, though, because like Don't get me wrong. He definitely got Luque and Ponzinibbio when he wanted to, right? Like didn't want Ponzinibbio before he had that long layoff and he was knocking everybody's head in, or, you know, you didn't want Luque when he was Darce choking people back to back to back. But the other thing is too, is if you go back and look at that Ponzinibbio fight, this did not look like the same Jeff Neal. He was so much faster. He was so much more explosive. His boxing was sharper. His head movement was better. Like, he just looked much more confident on the feet. And I think some of it might have come from, like, the idea that he thought that his striking was his advantage here. And so he just let go. Yeah. And then, too, once he stuffed, like, it wasn't even really a solid attempt at a takedown, but, like, he stuffed whatever Luque was trying to do there. He was just confident that he could let go. And I think when you fight Ponzinibbio, especially, and maybe this is why I got a bad read on him, when you fight somebody like Ponzinibbio, you're constantly worried about being punched in the head. That guy hits so hard. Luque hits hard, but Luque is not like a one-touch knockout guy usually. So maybe he just had more confidence in his striking there.
Yep. I was angry regardless watching it, because we whiffed on that one. So, thoughts for next for Jeff Neal, or do you have anything in mind for him or not?
I mean, it's a really hard one for me to call, because, like, on one hand, beating Vicente Luque ought to put you in that, like, talk to fight somebody like, you know, somebody like Wonderboy, or, you know, Gilbert Burns or Bilal Muhammad. But on the other hand, like, he has a loss to Neal Magny.
So,
where the hell does he fall in the grand scheme of things? So, you know, I know they've been booking the top of that division already, right? Like, we already got Sean Brady versus Bilal Muhammad, and there's Gilbert Burns is fighting Jorge Masvidal, and Leon's already booked, and, like, Khamzat's already booked, and, like, so right there alone, you know, the top six and the champ are booked, with the exception of Colby Covington, who on a cold, rainy day in hell is taking a fight with Jeff Neal. So, like, Wonder Boy is the only one in the top 10 other than Colby Covington free. I mean, I guess he could fight Shavkat Rachmanov, but, like, it's tough, because there's just not a lot of names there that are free at the moment. Might have to wait to see who wins one of these matchups or who looks bad in it.
Yep. Very true. All right. Heavyweights, tough finale. This one made me very upset, because Muhammad Usman is not good. But he still was able to knock out Zach Pounga, to all of our, basically 99% of us and the Discord's dismay, 36 seconds into the second round, to have himself crowned the Ultimate Fighter champion. I'm looking forward to fading him, whoever they match him up with next. Well, not necessarily. Heavyweight's got some people that he could beat, but wasn't impressed with him in the least.
Do you know how many strikes he landed?
Nine total.
It was 13 total, 12 significant. and he absorbed 33.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, like, that just shows you that, like, Pounga was doing exactly what I thought he would. But at the end of the day, too, maybe we have to remember it's heavyweight MMA and this kind of shit happens.
Yeah.
He didn't show power like that on the show either, or, like, in any of his fights for, you know, Titan or PFL or any other of the places he fought. He never really showed, like that was crazy knockout power. So, you know, props to him for that. I'm excited. I'll say this. I'm excited to see Zach Pounga at 205, because I think that's where he better belongs.
Yeah.
And I think somebody said it in the Discord server. It seems like Usman is just going to get, like, the best matchups ever, because Dana's gonna love. Like, it's too bad Jared Vandera's already got a matchup, because that feels like a Muhammad Usman fight.
Yeah. Very, very true. You think Pounga's they're gonna keep him around, because they have not. They don't always keep the loser of tough around.
Yeah, I mean, they did.
They do, but not always.
Yeah, and less and less so recently. Like, I don't think Gilbert Urbina is still under contract after losing to Brian Battle. Brady Hestand might be after losing to Ricky Tercios, but he's been injured, so we haven't seen him in a while. They didn't keep Joe Giannetti after his loss to Mike Trezano. Yeah, I mean, like, it's been pretty bleak for guys. But, like, also, they need 205ers. Like, he feels like a guy who, if a 205er drops out of a fight, you know, 3 weeks ahead of time, he can make 205. Like, just throw him in there as a late replacement, give him one more shot.
Yeah, I'm still more interested in him than Usman, but so be it. And then the other tough finale I hit, Dan did not, Juliana Killer Miller, another one of those galaxy brains, just like Ricky Turcios, beat Brogan Walker, TKO punches and elbows, 357 into the third round. With the vicious ground and pound, I had her at minus 130. Yeah, Brogan Walker, not UFC caliber.
She looks so bad.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really bad.
As I was watching, like, not very very dumb fighter, which was making Jong in the Discord very upset. He hates fighters that fight dumb. And just, like, it was both girls, their striking is very, very bad. Very sloppy striking. And as I was watching both tough and eyes, I'm like, oh, almost anyone on Contender Series would just destroy these people. This is like really low quality, not UFC caliber fighters. But at least Miller is young and has that dog in her. And like I said, she's a galaxy brain. So hopefully Dan can have her on the podcast sometimes. So we can hear her talk like Ricky Turcios.
I think, so I'll say this, like a lot of times when people blame and not just John, but when people blame fighters for having like low fight IQ, a lot of times it's just like it's really hard to do certain things in there. Yeah. Like, you know, like I've watched back grappling matches I've had and there's a coach yelling like, don't let them pass, and it's like, yeah, fucking it's really hard not to, dude. Like, it's like this guy wants to do this, so one of us is gonna lose out. So a lot of times I like don't always agree with the low fight IQ thing, but Brogan Walker kept walking into those clinch exchanges.
Yes. Yeah, like she was choosing to do it.
Oh my God. It was her
choice. She wasn't being forced into it. She was doing okay on the feet. Like both their strikings was horrible, but she was getting better on the feet. And then when she was getting better on the feet, she would rush in to a clinch and get taken down multiple times.
Yeah. And here's the weird thing too, is I think if this was just like, if neither a person came even close to a takedown, I think it was a coin flip of who would win. Like, I think, like, you're probably heading for a split decision where no judge had a good claim of who won. And, you know, maybe Juliana Miller still walks out with the win. But, like, I just – anytime she had any success to just clinch somebody who wants you to clinch them, it's a wild move. But to your original point, I don't know if I can come up with a women's flyweight that Juliana Miller beats. And feel like good about that pick. Somebody asked me, I think, on Fight Night in the Discord, if I had one. The only one I could kind of see her beating is maybe Ji-Yeon Kim, because she's like so strike heavy and kind of shitty on the mat. Like, I could see Miller maybe exposing that, but like, man, dude, there's not a lot of flyweight she beats.
Yeah, and that's the winner we're speaking of. Brogan Walker.
She won't get a second chance. She won't get a second chance. She won't get a second chance. No, absolutely.
Yeah. And Miller, I guess they're stuck with her now. Too bad they can't do like the developmental thing like they did with Greg Hardy, or like they did with some people off the Contender Series, because that would be much better for her to get more experience, because she's had what, four fights now?
Fights. That only moves her to 3-1.
3-1.
Which is pretty damn low, including a loss to somebody who was on that season, The Ultimate Fighter, which is pretty good.
Yeah,
crazy.
Right.
But like, yeah, I can't imagine.
Send her to Invicta. Like, anything's better than, like, she's going to flame out if she's in the UFC.
I'm looking at the list, because I got a list right here in front of me of all of the women's flyweights that exist. What do you think of her versus Mandy Bohm? Would you pick her to beat Mandy Bohm?
We're very anti-Mandy Bohm at this
She
point.
Was so bad.
So maybe, but it depends if she's dumb enough to get herself clinched nonstop. Because on the feet, she would destroy her, obviously. Because
what about Hannah Goldie? Would you take her to beat Hannah Goldie?
I don't know. Hannah Goldie's decent. Hannah Goldie's willing to get into striking battles, so probably not. Goldie probably would get the better of her on the feet.
What about Maria
Agapova? Stronger than her, for sure.
Maria Agapova after her last loss.
No, Agapova would beat her, of course.
Yeah, then I'm running out of names here that she could convincingly beat, or like even have a chance at beating. Like, yeah, that's bad.
Not our job, luckily, to do that. So we will bet against her, though. But hope, like I said, have her on Top Turtle. She's one of those, like they said, someone said in the Discord, one of those galaxy brands, hippie types that'll give you a lot of good quotes. So that's the Ultimate Fighter. Good riddance. Heavyweight, Sergey Spivak, look out. He is one again, beat Augusto Sakai, TKO punches, 342 into the second round. We were both in on Spivak at minus 250. Don't know why he wasn't ranked, especially at heavyweight heading into this fight, because he had won with 3 of 4, or 4 of 5. The only person he lost to was Tom Aspinall. Like, he's definitely going to get ranked now, but he looked very good, did what we hoped he would do, just continuously took down Spivak and ground and pounded himself to victory.
Yeah, that's, I mean, a really good point about him not being ranked. That's kind of crazy.
4 or 5, I was right. Yeah, so it's 5 and 6 now.
For the record, I did have him in my rankings, which I'm pretty proud of. Yeah. He was already in my rankings. But because I just had to check as you were saying that. I'm like, oh, shit, is that partially my fault? I mean, I think, you know, like the loss to Martin Tybura made him look pretty bad. It was a long time ago. And the Tom Aspinall fight doesn't look good, but it aged well. I really liked how good his grappling looked against Augusto Sakai. I liked how he moved in on it. Like, yeah, he's a real prospect, I think, at heavyweight. Like a real one that, like, you need to pay attention to, especially only at 27.
The youngest heavyweight, which is crazy. He's still, I looked it up after we were off the air the other last episode. He still is the youngest heavyweight. So yeah, and he basically can strike or grappling obviously is what he's best at, but you know, he can hold his own on the feet if need be.
Yeah, and he's a finisher too, which you like to see, because sometimes you get some of those heavyweights who don't do great work on the ground. He's got a lot of skills there in both, you know, keeping you down, holding you down, landing ground and pound, setting up submissions. Yeah, he's got it all.
Yep. Speaking of finishers, Terrence McKinney came through. T-Rex in the opener on the main card, lightweight submission, rear naked choke, 217 into the first round, made himself a backpack on Eric Gonzalez, and then looked like he was going to break his neck. Then Gonzalez finally tapped out. They exchanged a bit on the feet. Gonzalez seemed to stun McKinney a few times with strikes. This is basically what I thought would happen. McKinney would get a quick win, and we would learn nothing about him. And basically, he didn't really, other than getting a fatter bank account, he didn't really benefit too much from this fight. I guess more experience, but really, it's not like he got pushed or showcased any new skills.
I don't know. I think his we learned a little bit about how he approaches fights, because like he landed big on Gonzalez kind of early. Yep. There. It looks like he landed flush a couple of times. Maybe it didn't fully stun him, but like he didn't rush after that and pour it on. That's like true. He did against Dober. And then likewise, when Gonzalez landed on him, because like you said, Gonzalez did land on him once really hard. I don't know how many times were really hard, but at least once was. And his immediate reaction was, okay, I need to set up my wrestling. It's stupid for me to be trading with this guy who just wants to trade with me. Because Gonzalez doesn't have the ground game McKinney does, and everybody forgets. McKinney was a high school wrestler, which, you know, granted, tons of people high school wrestlers, but, like, clearly has a good wrestling and jiu-jitsu game. And he went to that. So, like, he went from being that, like, you know, that stereotypical, we all say it in there, low IQ guy against, you know, low fight IQ guy against Drew Dober. And he seems to have like figured that out a little bit. So I like it. There's lots of calls for him to fight Patty the Batty.
Oh, that would be so great.
Yeah.
Because we probably would get a good number on McKinney too in that.
Yeah, McKinney would flatten him.
Yeah. McKinney's better at him everywhere, basically.
At everything, correct.
At everything and everywhere. And there would be enough people disagreeing with that we could make some good money off that.
Yeah, there would be a lot of people disagreeing with it.
Yeah. Fantastic. So that was the main card. How did we do? I got 2 wrong. Dan got 3 wrong. So Dan was 3-3. I was 4-2. But unfortunately, other than Miller, all my hits were over the minus 200 variety. So it wasn't a profitable night. It makes it look like I did good, because it looks like Dan did good because we hit 6 out of 10 overall. But alas, we hit a lot of big, like Terrence McKinney, for instance, with what, minus 900? Yes, we had him at minus 900. So, oh, well. All right, let me tell you about IPVanish. Do you know that browsing online using incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? That's right. Without added security, you might as well give away all your private data to hackers, advertisers, your ISP, and other prying eyes. That's why I use IPVanish VPN to make it easy to stay truly private and secure on the internet. IPVanish helps you safely browse the internet by encrypting 100% of your data. This means that your private details, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be completely shielded from falling into the wrong hands. Even your physical location will be hidden. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. It's that simple. You can use IPVanish on unlimited devices without sacrificing on speed. Your computers, tablets, phones, even devices like your Fire Stick when you're streaming media. Whether I'm at home or in public, I don't go online anymore without using IPVanish. IPVanish is offering an incredible 70% off their yearly plan for our listeners with a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's just like getting 9 months for free. IPVanish is super easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're instantly protected. You won't even know it's on. Stop sharing with the world everything you stream, everything you search for, and everything you buy. Take your privacy back today with the brand rated 4.6 out of 5 on Trustpilot. So go to ipvanish.com/SGP. Use promotional code SGP and claim your 70% savings. This is ipvanish.com/SGP. And let me tell you about Odds Tracker as well. Odds Tracker is a place to compare odds from all the major sports books. You can also compare the different sign-up codes and promotions from sportsbooks to get the best deal. The app also provides player stats, key game stats, injury reports, projected game day weather for bettors to make the most informed bets possible. It also has a bet tracker so bettors can keep records of all your games and betting activities. So basically all you need is right there. So go to oddstrader.com/bluewire. Odds Trader is the number one site for all your game day bets. All right, this is a big four-card prelims. Somehow the UFC stretches out to over 5 hours even though there's only 10 fights. That's always a great thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. I saw a ton of people complaining about the pacing, mostly on Twitter. Nobody really cares on the Discord because we all just plug in there and talk about how we can, you know, make an even smaller prop with an even bigger number. But, like, everybody complains about it. The UFC is so consistent in the way that they pace their fights. Yep. It's literally a half an hour per fight. You can pace it out. It's a half an hour per fight all the time. So if the walkout was fast and getting into the cage was fast and the announcing was fast and the fight was fast, you're going to wait a little bit. And if the fight goes long, that's why sometimes people don't get interviewed because they got long walkouts and extra commercials and the fight took 15 minutes plus they had two groin shots. So, like, it's really predictable. So, yes, sometimes that's annoying, but, like, we got to see a bunch of cool finishes. So I can't complain.
We sure did. Like, Michael Olestechuk. took Sam Alvey up behind the bar and shot him in the head. He didn't really, because Sam Alvey probably hasn't agreed to retire yet, I don't think, despite getting beat up in front of all of his children, all 28 of his children. TKO punches 156 into the first round after getting bloodied up. Then he got beat up some more, and then that still wasn't enough for Herb Dean, so he got beat up some more, and then the fight finally ended.
Yeah, it's that's bad. First of all, he looks so awful. Just
his quote was, "I used to be good, honest." Well, that was 9 fights ago. So
yeah, it was a little bit ago. When you were do you know that that he fought and won on that aforementioned UFC Rockhold UFC Rockhold versus Bisping card?
Wow.
Yeah, he knocked him. He knocked out Dylan the Villain Andrews, which is that could have been one of your Remember Some Guys. Do you remember Dylan the Villain Andrews?
No, I don't.
Oh,
I
come
would.
On. He was on
if
the
I
ultimate,
watched him, I would.
He was on the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah,
he
that's
shared
why.
The team with Clint Hester, the head bussa.
I remember that guy.
I loved Clint Hester. But yeah, so he was on that. And it's now, you know, not any more clear that he shouldn't be fighting because it was already crystal clear. Olestechuk looks good at middleweight, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was more clear because he had a few decisions that he complained about, even though he clearly lost. So this one was definitive.
I guess if you're going to but Brendan Allen beat the living tar out of him. He got subbed by Julian Marquez. I guess Brendan Allen's a little bit further up in the division. But Julian Marquez hasn't looked great in the UFC. Like he's looked pretty damn bad, in fact. Like he's got losses to Alessio De Chirico, and he beat Sam Alvey and Maki Pitolo back to back. But like those
coconut
are the types
bombs.
Yeah, those are the types of people Alvey's losing to at this point. And I don't understand the justification, because also at this point in time, I know after 4 or 5 losses, everybody was like, people love Sam Alvey because he's smiling all the time and he brings the action. Now he doesn't bring the action. You know, and
people, like I said last podcast, people are done with him.
Yeah, people are done with it. So yeah, like I'm pretty done with it too. Like it just doesn't make any sense anymore.
No, party is over. That was his last fight on the UFC contract. So if he fights again, it probably won't be in the UFC. So
PFL.
PFL, here we come. $1 million for him. But anyway, yeah, Oleg Sejchuk, body-wise, looked good. He looked way smaller than he was. But maybe middleweight is home for him. We shall see. Minus 600, we hit that one. Another guy who dropped weight class and has success. We're much higher on this man. Brian Battle, minus 240. Did exactly what we hoped he would do. Actually, we weren't expecting a 44-second head kick KO, but that's what he did. Basically, he froze Takashi Sato. He fell to the canvas with his like arms crossed, kind of strange, and froze there. But yeah, Brian Battle looked fantastic at welterweight. It's a very this is same thing with McKinney. Very deep divisions, lightweight and welterweight. So don't rush him. Just keep giving him incremental steps up and let the guy progress.
I loved his two callouts. I don't know if you caught it because you don't usually.
Barbarina wasn't one.
He asked for Barbarina or Ian Garry. And I'm fine with either of those. Those seem like they make sense.
Garry, it's just like Terrence McKinney calling out other people calling out another British highly touted prospect. So
Irish. He's Irish. I'm sure the Irish folk listening are not going to be happy that you gave Ian Garry to England.
Yeah, it's true.
But
Ian Garry is Irish. Sorry.
Yeah.
I was thinking he was Welsh, but no, that's that other guy, Jack Shore. Is he the guy that's Welsh?
Yep, yes. Jack Shore. Sorry. So first
edit
of all,
that out.
Let's get up. No, I'm letting the Irish people come around to my side for giving them back.
All right.
let me two quick thoughts on Brian Battle. First of all, the knockout, so awesome for multiple ways. But the thing that was the best is that his striking is becoming more and more nuanced too, because that knockout came because he threw a same sided jab in front of that head kick, which is a pretty smart move because it has his hands up in the front of his face and then he kicked around the side of it and he has no way of seeing it coming because he's getting hit in the eyeballs with your jab. It was really smart and really fun. And the other thing I'll say is the power he generated. Cause again, I know sometimes you don't listen with the sound on. You need to go back and watch that knockout with the sound turned up. Cause it is insane.
Yeah, I heard it.
The impact on it. It's crazy. So yeah, I'm excited to see him keep fighting. I'd love him. Him and Barbarina, I think, would be a lot of fun.
Yep. It would be. So yeah, onwards and upwards with Brian Battle. Hopefully we get a good number on him next time. Hit that one. I did not hit this one. Sadly, another person gets beat up in front of their children. At least Miranda Granger's daughter is too young to figure out what was going on. Didn't realize that mommy got put in a Von Flue choke by Poppins, Corey McKenna, who looks like she's young enough to be Granger's daughter. Minute three into the second round, I went with the striker with the 10-inch reach advantage. Dan went with the grappler, and Dan hit this one minus 215.
Yeah, this was the type of Corey McKenna fight we should have saw out of her last time. Like she's finally like realized like, oh, I'm really good at grappling. Why am I striking with people? And now she's won 3 out of 4, which is pretty damn impressive. Also this highlighted the point I made about Miranda Granger and her takedown defense is just not there. So like you can have a 10-inch reach advantage, but like if you can't hit anybody hard and you have no takedown defense, you could have a 3-foot reach advantage and it ain't gonna help. So props to Corey McKenna. She looks good. Continue to move her up.
Yep. Not too fast, but yes. You think she's basically all grapple at this point though, still, right?
I think she got a little bit otherwise. Certainly the team she's working with ain't going to help that too much, but
Dan's favorite team.
Yeah. I mean, like she's just going to keep getting better at grappling and wrestling. I will say that's the thing that's usually the most disappointing about Team Alpha Male guys is that their hands just don't progress the way that you want them to. Like some of them have hands, but like they don't seem to get better with them. They just, their grappling picks up. So, she wouldn't be the first like grapple heavy person to make it work at strawweight. So, she just might use that to run up the scale. And who knows? Like she could physically mature too. She's only 23, right?
Yep. It's true. She's just a baby. Then in the opener, as per usual, we whiffed on the opener. Actually, I hit the opener a couple weeks ago. It's Dan that always whiffs on the opener, I guess. But Stephanie Eggert got submitted very straight. Like she looked exactly the way we wanted her to look. I heard it was a quick fight. I didn't know who won though, so I assumed Stephanie Eggert was going to ground and pound or submit her way to victory, which is looked like she was on the path to that. But no, she got her stuff armbarred by Myra. Why am I'm calling her another person's name? She's Myra Bueno Silva, 117 in the first round. Very controversial because Eggert didn't admit that she tapped, and Silva said she tapped, and the ref didn't see it, and one of the officials lied and claimed they did see it. So anyhow,
nobody saw that tap. Herb Dean apparently said he saw it too, which is just a fucking lie. But I'll say this. I'll say this about that phantom tap or whatever it was. Eggert wasn't like vehemently declaring she won, right? Or defending the fact that she didn't tap. They were like, "Did you tap?" Yeah. And she just sat there with her mouth open. And they're like, "We know you speak English."
it was the Swiss tap. Apparently, it used to be called the Brazilian tap, and now it's the Swiss tap. Apparently,
yeah. But like, she didn't claim she didn't. I don't think.
No.
So, at the end of the day, I think they got it right. The more and more I think about it, the more and more I think they got it right. It was a little bit disappointing in that fight, though, to see she got the takedown. She looked good on the ground the way that I thought she would. But then, like, clearly Silva was going to that armbar that I said she couldn't catch Egger with, so I was wrong about that. But she was going to it, and Egger, like, she did this thing where she pushed her shoulders in, which is a way that you can defend an armbar if you, like, move their legs down. But it was already so deep. Like, her first thought should have been, like, you know, posture and get my arms out of there, or, you know, work against her foot. And instead she, like, pushed into it. So, like, not the greatest submission defense, and maybe something we have to watch out for Stephanie Eggert is that, like, she does have great submission offense and good wrestling, but perhaps her, like, way of defending those submissions, maybe not the best. So just, like, something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it was disappointing. I had high hopes for her, but not so much now. So we missed on that one. Ended up 6-4. I was down $178. Dan was down $208. On the year, I dropped to 66%. I was at 67 forever. Now I'm 66. I'm still up $1,060. Dan is down as well, 58%. He's down $2,200. But there's still time.
There's
still time. Recommended plays, Dan at 1-2 and lost $44. He lost on Paunga, hit on Spivak, lost on Egger. I went 2-1, but I lost money, unfortunately, because I hit on two big ones, Hill and Battle, and then I lost an Egger, so I was down 262. So I am up still on the year. I'm hitting 62%, and I'm up $163 recommended play, 6.2% return on investment, so I'm happy with that. Dan is at 48%, and he's down $194, but there's still time.
There's still time.
As for the bonus winners, it was Hill Santos, main event, got $50,000 for fight of the night, and instead of giving out bonuses for every finish like they have recently, they only gave bonuses out to Neil, Usman, and Battle. Any issues with that?
So those were, I would say those were definitely the best knockouts. So like they definitely deserve that the most. I will say there feels like out of all of the people who got knockouts or finishes rather, of all of the winners, because Battle's, you know, smacked his head. Usman, real big knockout. Neil, absolute clinic, deserved one. The only person, if they're going to go above and beyond and give an extra one that feels like they kind of got screwed, is Corey McKenna. I really think she deserved one. Like, how many Von Flue chokes are there ever? And, like, she dominated leading into that, too. She
female, too, in the UFC to do that.
Yeah, and so, like, she just outclassed Granger at every corner and then subbed her with like an uncommon submission that she like set up well in her own right. So yeah, it feels like she kind of got left out in the wind, but like, yeah, other than that, I'm fine with it.
So that is that. And of course we, the Hunger Man John Superfan probably did not hit. Paunga via KO did not happen. It was a KO. It wasn't wrong way. And then Spivak via decision did not happen as well. So,
That one felt like it was trending the right way, but then Sakai just like stopped defending himself on the ground.
Yep. No, and then he complained about the fight being stopped, which was fun too. Yeah, he wanted to keep fighting, even though he was getting destroyed. Yeah. All right. So we were.
Well, and they also warned him 72 times to like do something about it. Yes. Like that's the worst thing. They were like, move, or I'm going to stop it. Move, or I'm going to stop it. And he did twice. And then the third time when he didn't move, they stopped it.
Yeah, that's the way it works. All right. UFC is moving off to San Diego next week, the Pechanga Arena in San Diego, California. On the 13th Saturday, we've got UFC and ESPN Vera versus Cruz, a very interesting bantamweight main event, Marlon Vera versus Dominic Cruz. We also have Angela Hill versus Lupi Godinez, Nate Landwehr versus David Onama, Devin Clark versus Azamat Mirzakhanov, Cynthia Calvillo versus Nina Nunes, or Nunez, Gerald Amirshart versus Bruno Silva, Yasmin Uraguay. She's not a guy, though. I can't remember how to say your name. I've said it before, though.
Juaregui
versus Izamin Lucindo. Is it Izamin?
I believe it's Izamin, yeah.
Izamin. So that's a women's strawweight. A heavyweight, Martin Boudet versus Lucas Breschke. Was he a Contender Series guy?
He was a Contender Series guy. So was Boudet.
Right. Mowgli. Benitez, Gabriel Benitez versus Charlie Ontiveros, Yusuf Zalal versus Damon Blackshear, Ode Osborne versus Tyson Nam, and then maybe Jason Witt versus Josh Quinlan, and then hopefully this one seems certain, Ariana Lipsky versus Priscilla Cachuera. Thoughts on the card?
Like it quite a bit. There's a few people who I'm really interested in seeing. That Lupi Godinez versus Angela Hill fight's weird because it was actually booked for like late October, I think, or early November. And they bumped it up like a month or two so that they would have more fights on this card because a couple of them dropped off late. I always like seeing Gerald Meerschaert. Devin Clark is always uniquely frustrating, so I'm excited to see that. The Nina Nunes Calvillo fight that we already broke down will be on there. So, yeah, there's lots to like on it.
Gerald Meerschaert, is he an automatic bet for you still at this point?
Oh, yeah, he usually is. And Bruno
Silva. I haven't looked at the lines or anything. So.
Bruno Silva is an interesting one. I'm going to have to think on it because Bruno Silva is 3-1 in the UFC with only a loss to Alex Pereira, who he lost due to by decision. And he knocked a lot of people out. And he's knocked a lot of people out before the UFC, too, including some big name dudes when he was in M1. I think he knocked out Alexander Slamenko, which is a former Bellator champ.
So there you go. That will be next week. We will be breaking down the prelims on Wednesday, the main card on Thursday. But before all that, maybe even now, if you check your feed, you will have our next episode, which will be breaking down Tuesday's Contender Series. So make sure you listen to that. Dan's going to get back on track this week because we do have a shirt now in sportsgamblingpodcast.com/store that says he creates Tuesday Night Miracles, so he has to live up to that now. So go and grab that shirt, or if you'd like a chance to win free stuff, give us a review, and maybe we'll do this contest till the end of the month. I'm kind of flexible with the end date, but we're randomly going to select a review and give them a $50 gift card to our swag store. So if you don't want to wait that long though, go by all means go and buy the shirt for you and all your family. So that will be next in your ears. Make sure you are following us on Twitter, SGPN MMA. I am Jeff Fox, writer. He is Gumby Vreeland. Read all our stuff at sportsgamblingpodcast.com, obviously, or my MMA stuff at moneymma.substack.com. And Dan's top Twitter podcast will be dropping later on in the week. We'll talk more about that then. I think that's it. Is that it, Dan?
I think you got it all.
Go ahead. Take us to bed.
All right. I'm David Gumby Vreeland. He's smiling Jeff Fox, and we'll see you in just a moment.